What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. News Talk 1110-993 WBT 704-570-1110 1-800-WBT-1110 and the email is pete@thepetecallinershow.com. Thanks a lot for hanging out. I appreciate it. Welcome to the show. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Pete Callinor. So I may be dating myself here, but do you remember that time? It was during a... It was during one of the presidential primary debates, and there was a candidate who said, if you look at the threats that we face, terrorists have come in through our southern border. And it was a guy named, if memory serves correctly, it was a guy named Ron DeSantis. I think he was governor of a state at the time. And he said this, and then the media pounced, seized upon the comment, if you will, claiming it to be false. Eileen Sullivan at the New York Times said, this is false. This is not true. Terrorists have not come in through our southern border. So, news today, terrorists have come in through the southern border. I'm as shocked as you are. How could that have happened? Are you telling me that the app that they are using somehow or another doesn't effectively screen out the ISIS people? It's weird. Six Russian nationals suspected to have terror ties to ISIS have been arrested in a coordinated sting operation in Los Angeles, New York, and Philadelphia. That, according to the New York Post, in an exclusive reveal, two ICE sources confirmed to the Post that they arrested at least six people. I've now heard reports that there are eight people who hail from Tajikistan. They've made these busts over the last week after the FBI contacted the agency to warn it. Two others who were not who were part of the same group were also arrested after being under surveillance for several months by a multi-agency joint terrorism task force. That's according to NBC. Okay, so there's your total of eight, I guess. You got six in the New York Post exclusive, and you've got NBC reporting two others, but part of the same group from Tajikistan, which I guess is a region in Russia, I believe. Or maybe it's a whole country. I'm not sure because they're calling them Russian nationals. So I'm thinking it's a region, Tajikistan, which is a fun name to say. I find it to be way more fun than Chechnya, you know.
Tajikistan is its own country.
It's one of those.
It's right. It's border to the on its northeast border is Kyrgyzstan. And
I believe the pronunciation there is Kyrgyzstan.
To its to its southwest is Afghanistan. Directly to the west is Turkmenistan. And northwest is Uzbekistan.
Lots of stans.
So it's in the Stan region. The world.
Yeah.
But it's its own country.
It's the Stan district. Eminem. Huge in that part of the world, as I understand it. Part of the investigation featured a wiretap which revealed one of the now arrested individuals was talking about bombs and other poorly reviewed movies. The target, who was subject to the wiretap, was previously released by federal authorities at the southern border with a court date next year. So he had a whole year to plot the bombs. It has since emerged that he has potential ties to ISIS, according to the sources. Now, however did they manage to get into this country with that kind of background and these kinds of motives and desires? It's a good question. Well, they crossed the southern border. And they didn't cross it, apparently, in a way that evaded authorities, right? No, they actually, they got vetted. Yeah, They talked to federal authorities. The federal authorities, quote, vetted them. And they didn't turn up any negative information tied to their names. I don't know what names they used. Were they their real names? I don't know. But it didn't turn up any red flags. And so they let them go. And they're like, hey, we're not even going to ankle monitor you. We're just going to let you go. And just make sure that you show up for that court date in 2025. Yeah. At least two of the men had crossed into the United States in spring of 2023. Oh, so the court date's actually like 2 years out. So an extra year to do the plotting of the bombings and such. One of them had used the CBP1 app. CBP1, that's the app that the Biden administration, to much fanfare, rolled out with the promise that this is the way that they are going to control the southern border. Look, they got an app. People use the app, and this allows for the streamlining, if you will, of the asylees coming through, none of whom are coming to do us any evil. They're not here to do us any harm, right? Every single person that's crossing the border illegally and going into the CBP1 app and doing the asylum process, every single one of them are just here to live the American dream. The arrests come after warnings from the FBI director, Christopher Wray, about possible ISIS terror plots being staged on U.S. soil and the group's potential for exploiting the southern border. Way back in April, Director Wray gave a warning to lawmakers that a possible, quote, coordinated attack could take place in the United States following an ISIS-K attack on a concert hall in Moscow, which was carried out by citizens of, that's right, Tajikistan. 145 people were killed, hundreds more wounded. But that was because that was just Russia, you know? They attacked Moscow, so it's different. They would never do something like that against the great Satan. ISIS-K, by the way, stands for Islamic State Khorasan, referencing a region which includes parts of Iran, Turkmenistan, and Afghanistan. It is what is described as an extreme offshoot of Islamic State. That's like when you're, because Islamic State, maybe this is like Hamas. Well, they are like Hamas, actually. Very similar. But maybe they've got a military wing, and then they've also got like the administrative wing where they just do, you know, road projects and sewer upgrades, build some schools and stuff, hand out candies when Jews get murdered. Maybe stuff like that. Like that's the administrative state. And then they got like the military wing, and the military wing, those are the ones that, you know, kidnap people, do the gang rapes and do the dressing them in orange, putting them into cages, drugging them up and then lighting them on fire, beheading them, posting the videos online. Like that's like the ISIS military wing. But ISIS-K is like, you guys know, like you're not even hardcore enough. We're going to go more extreme than ISIS. So we're going to call ourselves ISIS-K, which kind of sounds like a cereal. Just a month before Wray testified about the Bureau's fears, so this would have been in, what, March of this year, he shared his concerns with the Senate Intelligence Committee about a human smuggling operation at the southern border. And that operation had ties to terrorists from ISIS-affiliated groups. I am as shocked as you are that Islamists would use the poor southern border to infiltrate America in order to attack us. Who could have possibly foreseen this thing coming? Well, except that candidate, like I was telling you at the beginning, Ron DeSantis, I think was his name. Besides him, right? With migration continuing at unprecedented levels, federal authorities have already accidentally, quote unquote, released migrants into the country who have suspected or known terror ties. There you go. By the way, how's that impeachment going? No reason I ask. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? Noah Pollack is a political consultant and he is a contributor to the Washington Free Beacon. And along the lines of the story I just went over about the, you know, eight people with terrorist ties that have now been rounded up in America after coming through the southern border, we're seeing all of these types of protests all around. It started on the college campuses, you know, pro-Hamas. They're escalating, right? There were these mobs in Washington, D.C. There was another one up in New York. They are defacing public property. They're, spraying graffiti all over monuments and stuff. They're threatening and intimidating Jewish people at UCLA. They surrounded one of the administrators as he was walking across campus under armed guard protection. And they're swarming around him and screaming, "You're not safe. You're not safe." I mean, that's a threat. And now we see, where is this? The Brooklyn Museum director and multiple Jewish board members had their homes vandalized, spray painted, banners attached to their homes. The Brooklyn Museum, right? Because what, the Brooklyn Museum somehow sets Israeli foreign policy or something? Like, Noah Pollack says, this is 100% the fault of the Democrat Party. And I agree, 100%. He says, I'm not being partisan here. Everybody knows the groups, the activists, the donors that are all behind this street thuggery, intimidation, and criminal acts. Right? They know these people. Of course they do. These are their shock troops. Right? These activists are plugged into the leftist network, and so is the Democrat Party. Not all members of the Democrat Party and all voters that vote Democrat, they're not all going to know, but the infrastructure does. The people who run the show, the people who organize and plan events and that sort of stuff, they know who these people are. They know the groups. The Democrats who run the DOJ, as well as local law enforcement in these blue jurisdictions, they continue to refuse to do anything about it. They don't investigate. They don't arrest people. They don't prosecute them. And so the perpetrators, he says, Muslim and leftist groups, have been given de facto immunity by the Democrat Party, and they know it. And so they escalate, right? And it's not going to stop until Democrats in these districts stop it. I've been saying this for the better part of, what now, 2 years. This ends when people say it ends, right? And in this case, for this particular direct action, as the leftists call it, it's going to require Democrats to stop it. Because right now, Democrats control the levers of governmental power. And every day you don't stop it, I'm drawing conclusions about whether or not you are actually opposed to these kinds of actions. That's the logical response. And that's why I adopt it. Email is Pete@thepetecallinershow.com. On Twitter, it's @PeteCalliner. Couple of messages. Denny says he prefers Drive-By Dave for Dave Hewitt, the traffic guy. We're working on a nickname. Stan writes to Pete at thepetecalinershow.com. The one thing I don't understand is why about two-thirds of American Jews support and plan to vote for Democratic candidates in the upcoming election while the party is obviously anti-Jewish. Either they're missing something or I am. It could be both. Probably a little from column A and a little from column B. I think there are, there's also a third, which is that there are Jews in America that have been, you know, loyal supporters of the Democrat Party who are now breaking away because they are seeing what has occurred. And like, this is about electoral politics, and there are probably a good chunk of Jewish voters that and donors and such that are willing to kind of whistle past the graveyard on this stuff, thinking that, oh, it's just the, you know, Democratic candidates that have to placate this, you know, pro-Palestine mob in order to win elections. Like Michigan, for example, Joe Biden needs to win Michigan. And so he's, you know, catering to the desires of the large Muslim population that's in Michigan, particularly Dearborn, for example. And so he doesn't want to come out too harshly against the Palestinians, doesn't want to be too supportive of Israel. And this is, there's a real schism in the Democrat Party right now over Israel and Hamas. So I think that's some of it. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us do miss it because on the right, I'm looking at what's going on in these cities. And I know that the only reason that it's allowed to continue is because they are allowing it to continue. And I would posit that it's bigotry, not necessarily in the minds or in the way that like, oh, this is anti-Jewish bigotry. I mean, yes, it is that, but it is it's a bigotry like George W. Bush might say, of low expectations, right? There's like this noble savages kind of mentality on the left where it's like, oh, they just don't know. We don't expect them to behave better. Oh, well, you know, that's just how those people are. That's bigotry. And they don't even realize that they say it and they do it. And we've encountered this for years. They talk about different groups of people like this all the time. These low expectations. Like, no, it's not prejudicial to say we expect certain things of all people in our society. And whether it's, you know, burning down your neighborhood convenience store and looting the CVS when a jury verdict doesn't go your way, that's just as unacceptable as, you know, threatening and intimidating Jewish students on a campus. We expect certain things in a high-trust, open, free society. And Democrats feel like they either can't enforce those norms, or those laws, right? Or they don't want to because they see some other ends that can be justified by these means. I am of the opinion that a lot of people on the left are totally fine with political violence. I think there are people on the right that are fine with it too, but it is not adopted as part of, and like that's why January 6th was such an anomaly, because you don't see people on the right engaging in that kind of violent activism, if you will. But we see it all the time on the left, all the time, because these are agents of destabilization. The philosophy that animates them forgives all sorts of these transgressions because it's all about the power dynamic. And so, like oppressor, oppressed, the colonizer stuff, all of that is through the same power dynamic rubric. And when you see it, you see it everywhere because it animates the entire philosophy. That's the intersectionality of all of these different groups. That's how you end up with, you know, Queers for Palestine, right? It's like you would think logically that people who are engaged in those groups are part of those groups and they're marching with these groups. Like, does logic not obtain for you? What's the deal? How would you not know this? How do you not see this? Because it's not about, what do I always say, right? It's the issue is never the issue. The issue is always revolution. That's the purpose. So intersectionality is where all of these disparate groups come together for one purpose, and that one purpose is revolution, to destabilize. Now, after the destabilization takes down the society, I guess everybody's going to go murder each other in the streets or something. There was a report at the Daily Signal by Hudson Crozier. 9 things I saw at the pro-Hamas White House rally. Thousands gathered around the White House on Saturday to demand that President Joe Biden stop all military aid to Israel amid its war against the terrorist group Hamas. The Shut It Down for Palestine movement, comprised of controversial groups such as Students for Justice in Palestine, organized the giant rally. Several organizations in the movement previously praised the October 7th attack, in which Hamas killed about 1,200 Israelis, raped women, and took hundreds of hostages. Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, for example, referred to the terror onslaught as a, quote, historic win, just days after the news broke. Saturday's gathering proved a striking display of unity between Muslim, Marxist, LGBTQ, and even some Jewish activists. Many organizers and demonstrators made it clear that they were not just demanding a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Resistance against the Jewish state and fierce anti-American sentiment were the overall themes. Right? They call Israel little Satan, and they call America great Satan. There's a reason for that. Again, how do you end up with Muslims, LGBTQ, Jewish, and Marxist activists all descending on a single spot and engaging in, quote, protest behavior and violence and vandalism and such? Intersectionality. Why? Because the issue is the revolution. Hudson Crozier writes at the Daily Signal about the 9 things he saw at the pro-Hamas White House rally, which, you know, also vandalized a whole bunch of the statues in D.C. So here are the 9 things he saw. Number 1, support for terrorism. A group of masked individuals carried a sign calling for jihad and al-Qassam, which is a reference to Hamas's military unit. So the military, so support of the military wing, not just the administrative wing, but the military wing. A man walking by the protesters told them to be careful about their messaging. And one of them replied, "Shut up!" More than a few fringe actors explicitly praised terrorists at the events, too. Number 2, vandalism. The small police presence failed to stop protesters as they spray-painted historic monuments and property surrounding the White House. To date, no arrests have been reported. The U.S. Capitol Police referred the Daily Signal to U.S. Park Police for comment, and the Park Police did not immediately respond when asked about arrests. So that's it. So calls for jihad, calls for violence, and vandalism, and what else? America portrayed as an enemy, number 3. Number 4, calls to end Israel. One man scrawled "Death to Israel" on one of the monuments. Agitators also wrote, "Al-Qassam, you make us proud. Kill another soldier now." Wrote that on a different monument. Marxist ideology. Protesters advocated for socialism, signaled support for the brutal Cuban revolution leader Che Guevara, and they offered copies of the Communist Manifesto as well as other Marxist writings to people who passed by. Protesters held signs from the Party for Socialism and Liberation, which is a communist party founded in 2004. What else? Bleep Joe Biden. The crowds painted President Joe Biden as a mass murderer of Palestinians in tandem with Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Some held giant posters showing the heads of the two leaders with blood dripping from their mouths. Others held a small severed head of the president. Well, it wasn't like a real severed head. It was like a mask. It was a costume. And then they would occasionally chant, bleep Joe Biden, although I don't know if it sounded like that, but that's what they chanted. What else did we have here? Number seven, LGBTQ allies. Several protesters carried signs or flags promoting gay and transgender rights as they rallied for Gaza, where male homosexual activity is illegal. Yeah, it gets you drawn and quartered, thrown off a rooftop, even. There was Jewish support, number eight. And finally, there was number nine, one single angry Israel supporter. The number of demonstrators had significantly dwindled after about 4.5 hours or so. And at that time, a young man began kicking their signs off of the grass surrounding a monument and cursing them out and flipping them off. Those were the nine things that Hudson Crozier saw at the totally not insurrection-y, vandalism-laden, violence-prone protests at the White House. And there was another round up in New York, right? There were targeted protests against Jewish administrators on college campuses at UCLA, the defacing and vandalism at the homes of museum leaders up in Brooklyn, just targeting Jews now, just openly targeting Jews. At some point, Democrats in these blue cities, you guys are going to have to do something about this. Do you have any Patagonia gear? I don't think I do. It was always a little pricey for me. Patagonia, the outdoor apparel brand with offices across the world, granted tens of thousands of dollars to a group connected to Palestinian terrorism. Now the company says it's launched an internal review into its funding. Through its tax-exempt private foundation in California, Patagonia has sent more than $139,000 over the last 5 years to a group called Alliance for Global Justice, or AFGJ, or AVGJ. The same progressive Arizona-based organization is linked to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFLP, or the PUFLP, a fact that prompted donors and payment processors like PayPal to cut ties with the AFGJ amid mounting scrutiny from Congress. One project under AFGJ is Semidun, an Israeli-designated terrorist coalition that has shared staffers with the PFLP. Their grants to this umbrella organization totaled $30,000 last year, and they said it was supposed to go to climate-focused projects, building activism among Black TLGBQIA plus individuals through climate advocacy and community gardening. We totally had no idea that they were diverting this money to terrorists. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.